Can we leave that for the question answers? Because we're going to have half an hour or so of question answers. Just want to touch on the non-psychotic side of mental health, and sometimes this can be the trickier side, actually, because it's dealing with people that have personality disorders. And just to give you a little bit of an idea of how to understand personality disorders, it was once said to me that the female jails are full of women with borderline personality disorders, which you may have heard of, and that the male jails are full of men with antisocial personality disorders. The antisocial personality disorder often stems from a childhood where there's been issues with, you know, conduct disorder, issues with, you know, problems with police, the law, getting into legal situations and so on as a young person, and growing up into a situation where they become a criminal, end up in jail, that type of thing. I'm generalising here. The borderline personality disorder is worth understanding, because if we have people in our centres with that type of personality disorder, and there are several other types as well, but I'll just focus on this one. They may have come from a background of sexual abuse as a child, and I'm generalising again, it's not necessarily that all people in that situation develop a borderline personality disorder, but it's possible. So as an adult, they are, you know, in fairly overwhelming situations quite regularly, as far as dealing with their internal feelings and reactions and responses to what, you know, the normal ones amongst us would consider to be a normal stressor. And so somebody with a borderline personality disorder can often, you know, have developed some very manipulative ways to cope with dealing with situations so that they feel comfortable and that they feel safe. And we have to be quite merciful with souls with this disorder. And I'll just let you know that in mental health work, it's actually probably one of the hardest type of disorders to deal with, because some of the behaviours that can be very manipulative can actually split staff. So you can imagine a situation in centres where somebody has got a borderline personality disorder, generally female, but not always, maybe really quite a dramatic person, creating scenarios and scenes, and the result of that can be situations where people feel very divided. And sometimes this type of behaviour can continue, and it can really undermine what people are trying to actually do in the centre, you know, get things done and so on. I won't go into it too much more, but it's something that we're going to talk about a bit further later, manipulative behaviour. But you know, when you have been manipulated by somebody else, you feel it, you understand it. So dealing with that is something else we're looking at talking about in workshop. So you've probably got loads of questions. I'll just put you back to Diane.
How are you doing? I did want to tell you that the incidence of schizophrenia is not that common. It's estimated to be about 1% of the population. They say that bipolar disorder was estimated to be 1% of the population, but that's actually increasing in recent years, and now they say in some countries it's probably 2%. So if you combine those together, that's 3%. So hopefully you will encounter this extremely rarely. But as Brahmins, we are so into a culture of care, and we're so tolerant, and we're so loving. And I know I've been very impacted the last couple of years by a couple of people who were psychotic. And so it really made me look at sometimes having too much tolerance and too much mercy. So we really have to recognize sometimes the signs and act and consult. How many of you would like a little one-pager with the benefits of meditation and the possible harms? Would that be helpful? Okay, we'll try to get that to you very soon. We'll consult with several people and make sure it's approved by the NCs, but we'll try to get that to you, and I think we should put it up on the website too, because that is our duty of care. Okay, so we'll be taking questions, and Nikhil? Okay, the first question, would you like to write them and bring them up? That would be lovely. Or you can ask them. The first question is, what about a person who takes 2.5 hours to clean a kitchen every night? And that person is also depressed. Okay, this is when you guys get to answer, is there a problem? Everybody who thinks there's a problem, raise your hand. Okay, you're right. I think you wanted to say something else.
I have the privilege to answer to this question. You must be aware of different kinds of obsessions that people have. What is an obsession? It's a repetitive, intrusive, irresistible thought or image or impulse, which cannot be, it is accompanied by the compulsion of doing that again and again, despite knowing that it is funny and it causes a lot of stress or anxiety. You already know that you have cleaned your kitchen properly, very meticulously. There is no mesh or dust. Still, you have the thought that it's still unclean. It's, you know, flimsy or dirty. You need to clean again. Still you are not satisfied. You feel as if it's still dirty. You go on cleaning it again. And as has been asked by somebody, it takes about 2.5 to 3 hours to clean the kitchen. Right? The person who has this problem as a compulsion of obsession of contamination, that there is some dust of bacteria still lying there, so I have to clean it again and again. So that obsession of contamination or having infection in the kitchen is countered again and again by cleaning repeatedly until the person is exhausted or tired. Although the person knows that cleaning again and again is a funny act. Doesn't serve any purpose. If you clean the kitchen once or twice and you're pretty sure there is nothing dirty lying there, all utensils are clean, the platform is clean, the oven is clean, everything is clean in the kitchen, still you go on doing it. And one mind says that whatever you're doing is funny, please don't do that. But then the person, the other mind says, no, please keep doing. Keep it doing, you know. And it goes on cleaning again and again. So this is nothing else but obsessive compulsive disorder. There are different kinds of obsessions people have, persons have, and one of them is this obsession of contamination followed by repeated cleaning or washing or hand washing or bathing or taking repeated showers. And if it lasts for more than 1 month, listen to me carefully, if it lasts more than 1 month and if it causes severe distress or significant anxiety, stress, then only it's labeled as obsessive compulsive disorder and the person should consult a psychiatrist. There are some neurotransmitters which are culprits in the brain and it can be corrected with the help of appropriate treatment. There are other common kinds of obsessions and compulsions that people have. Some people have obsession of doubt. They are always under doubt. Even if they lock the door of their house or lock the car, they still carry a doubt that they haven't locked it properly. So they have that thoughts, repetitive thoughts in their minds that they have to check it again. Today, at times they check it again and again, or at times they just carry those thoughts again and again. Probably the lock is still not, you know, I haven't locked the door, I haven't locked the car properly. They aren't sure. Even if they are in the office, they have those thoughts of doubt that they haven't locked the car properly or the house properly. Anyway, that is known as obsession of doubt, followed by compulsion of repetitive checking. Different kinds of obsessions people have, and this is fortunately a very curable, treatable illness, and one should consult the family psychiatrist. There is another obsession for studying Murli. In the study room, and for hours in the study room. Okay. I hope you have listened to this obsession of studying Murli for hours in this study room. That means the person doesn't go for karma yoga, doesn't go for any job. Yes, she wants to add plan. Yeah, please.
I just want to say that how wonderful the person wants to clean. He can come to my center. But actually, there's some very effective medications, and also therapy is very effective. And, you know, when we're approaching the person, you may, you know, always start with a positive. You know, I see this virtue, I see this virtue, I see this virtue. But what I'm seeing, you're spending so much time, is taking away from the time you could do to doing other things. And sometimes you may want to do other things and you may feel compulsed to do that. And this is something that happens to a lot of people, and you know, you might want to consult somebody about it. I mean, always start with their virtues and find a time when you're feeling really loving and balanced, you know, and discuss it with them. I think this is important. You know, don't shame them, don't increase guilt, but really offer your support. And say, I know you love Buddha so much, but when we feel compulsed, we have to learn to be completely free of that too. So you may want to do some counseling about that. Yeah.
Just to answer to this specific question of studying Murli for us in the study room, the definition, you cannot label somebody having obsessive compulsive disorder until and unless the person has this kind of symptoms for at least 1 month, which causes significant deterioration in the job and social relationship. If it is for few days or few weeks during intense bhakti, it's not an obsession, believe me. If it causes significant occupational deterioration, relationships with people, interpersonal relationships with others, and it causes intense anxiety, then only it is an illness. Which is this question which somebody has asked. If it remains for a few days to study Murli for us in a study room for a few days or a few weeks, which doesn't cause anxiety, on the contrary, it causes a lot of joy and pleasure, is not an obsession, believe me. Okay?
Thank you.
I think, did you ask this question? Okay. If you are audible to the audience, then you probably can ask. Then you should raise your voice. Please ask loudly. Yeah, sister is asking the question. Yeah, I'm repeating the question. That if this patients of obsessive compulsive disorder have associated depression, should they be allowed to come to the center? It doesn't matter. They should be allowed to come to the center unless and until they have intense suicidal tendency. If they become suicidal, if they go into severe depression, then obviously you should not entertain them at the center. Can we go to the another question?
I had a question from somebody as well, and that is whether we were the only two people doing this, Gopi and I, or whether we would welcome help. We welcome help. So if you'd like to help this group and you're a mental health professional, please put your name very clearly and your email address. Okay. So if you'd like people to review this and to give input. Okay. One question. How do we deal with prejudice from the culture which prevents people from consulting? There are seniors who just want to call bipolar people eccentric. And I think we have seen this very much in the Brahmin family. I remember in the early 90s when I gave the very first class in the Yajna on depression. And I was told, Brahmins are not depressed. Anybody who's depressed is not a Brahmin. Like anybody who's ever been angry at God is not a Brahmin, right? I think things are changing, and I think the global functioning conversations are really helpful in that regard, and I hope the mental health resource guide will be helpful in that regard too. But the Yajna years ago, a couple of decades ago, never recommended counseling, and now they do it commonly. I know that in the UK there's a couple of BK counselors that do that commonly, and I know that occasionally I'm sent someone as well, so it does happen. Okay, next question, Gopi, which one should we read? Okay. Which question? Okay.
Yeah, that's a very good question. I know 5 decades back when people used to have physical ill health, fever, say for example, they never used to go to a doctor to get their fever treated, you know. There was stigma, prejudice, attached to consulting a doctor, even for fever. So is the case with psychological problems, mental problems now. Somebody who has depression has prejudice. Somebody who has gross abnormal behavior or grossly severe illness like schizophrenia is reluctant to consult a psychiatrist because this is a new branch. This is a new medical scientific field which is developing. It has already developed in some of the developed countries, but still in developing countries, as you said, it's a new field, new speciality. So people are not aware of the fact that even a normal person can also consult a psychiatrist to improve his or her personality. It's not necessarily crazy people who go and consult psychiatrists. Say for example, those who are physically unfit or ill or unwell, they go to the physicians to get their physical illness treated. And it does not mean that somebody who is completely physically healthy doesn't go to the physician. He also goes to the physician to get his physical health maintained by regular checkups. Similarly, for psychological problems, yes, in developing countries or undeveloped countries, people, because of lack of awareness regarding mental health, they are reluctant to consult the psychologist and the psychiatrist. But in general, people have been getting more aware and aware, you know, day by day, and they have started going to the psychiatrist in time. At times, they get delayed, you know, it becomes too late when they consult the psychiatrist. But in general, the awareness is on the rise. Yes, next question.
Actually, so far I've found three that are very similar. And they are, how do you differentiate between a person who's possessed by an evil spirit and having a psychiatric illness? How can you recognize a mental disease as different from a ghost influence? What's the line of understanding between a mental illness and being possessed by another soul? So that's the same question. Okay, who would like to answer that?
This is fairly universal and omnipresent question. Every center has. Somebody who has severe psychiatric illness, how will you know that it's evil soul, possessed by a soul, or it's an illness? You should be very clear about the understanding about this. Time and again, even in the past, Baba has spoken in Murlis. Let us have the facts before us right now. The actual birth rate per minute in the world is more than 150 per minute. And the death rate is less than 100 per minute. So there is an increase of about 50 to 60 human beings every minute on this planet Earth. Where do these souls come from? You may argue that these are the souls who are coming from Paramdham. If that has been the case, that all these souls are the new souls who are coming from Paramdham, the land of peace, and taking birth on this earth, during last 60 years since Shri Baba has incarnated on this earth, about 4 billion people, approximately, more than 3 billion people would have been the new souls, and this world would have been at least silver age, if not golden age. But that is not the case. The reality is, the birth of extra new human beings of 50 to 60 taking every minute is because of most of the evil souls, wandering souls, have been taking birth. If you recall, two years back, when there was a tsunami attack in the Indian Ocean, and more than 500,000 souls died within a couple of minutes. Soon after that, Baba and Murli had referred to that disaster of tsunami and spoken that all the souls have taken rebirth. None of them were wandering. If you go to the Murli, you can refer to that point. In other words, what I'm saying is, the population of Earth is increasing at an enormous speed, and most of the evil souls, wandering souls, have taken birth or are under the process of taking birth. At the same time, the land of peace, Paramdham, is also about to be getting emptied. The very important thing that you must remember, when you have a crazy person coming to the center, don't be mistaken or misguided by the fact that he or she is possessed by an evil soul. Okay? What happens if you don't get him or her treated, then this person is going into some complications. Any untreated psychiatric illness leads to grave consequences, grave complications. If you don't get your fever treated, so for example, if you don't get your physical illness treated, there are different complications that you have to suffer from. Similarly, if you don't get treated the psychiatric illness, you have different complications of it. And you may end up into a problem. The person definitely suffers who is having a severe psychiatric illness, but at the same time, because of his or her illness, the family suffers, the center suffers, the farming family suffers, the people, colleagues at workplace suffer. So don't, please, don't be mistaken by this kind of concept that the person is possessed by an evil soul or a evil soul, whatever. Please get him or her treated.
I just want to add a little bit to that, and just from my experience, that sometimes there's either a little bit of fascination or fear when we think about spirits and evil spirits and possession, that kind of thing. So just from a very spiritual angle for Brahmins, it's good that we can make sure that we're not either way, fearful or fascinated. In mental health situations, there will be people who are possessed, but I think when they come our way, we, you know, need to be merciful and detached and not going into this fear or fascination of the situation. One experience I had, I was working in a hospital and a fairly young man had come in and he was talking to me incredibly rationally about how he had an evil spirit in him and when it had happened and how it had come in and how when he got out of hospital, because he'd actually been involuntary brought into hospital, when he got out of hospital that he was going to go and see a priest and get exorcised. And that was his view on it. You know, he was very rational about it and it was quite believable. So, I mean, it's there, it happens, but not to be fascinated by it and not to be fearful and not thinking about the one that's in front. I mean, it's just some karmic situation that's quite intense to that person, but that's where we really have to be a great donor and very loving and detached. I hope that answers the question, because I don't think it's worth kind of, you know, going into it too analytically and putting a lot of attention into the area.
Just a caution, you know, the guidelines that we'll be sending out in this conversation is not intended for you to diagnose mental illness. That is not our job. That is the job of the psychiatrist only. So just a, you know, that comment. But it's important to be aware of signs. Because sometimes you may be thinking you don't have enough tolerance power or, you know, what's happening. And so if you recognize what a delusion is, and, you know, like the sister all of a sudden, you know, can't see any brother because she thinks they all have impure desires and goes and hides in her room, there's a problem. You know, if she needs to lock her door because all of a sudden so-and-so is going to steal all her credit cards, there's a problem. You know, you're not diagnosing, you're just learning a way to get them to help. Now, sometimes there is nothing we can do. We cannot force people to take medication. No one on earth in the USA can force another person to take medication unless in court they waive that right. But it has to go to court. But I talked to a lovely friend at home who's a clinical psychologist, and she said, you know, Diane, you can just sort of have a jerk theory. A jerk in American slang is someone who's just being really nasty, really mean. And, you know, outside of Madhavan, there's this lovely saying that people operating under the influence of the vices can be asked to leave. So in other words, what I'm saying is, if the behavior is really bizarre, you don't have to you are not diagnosing. But if you ask them to get help and they refuse, you can say, just this and this behavior is not acceptable. when you have those under control, you're very welcome to come back. If they're extreme. So I just wanted to share that. Okay. Now, I don't know about you, but maybe do a small stretch break and 10 minutes of meditation. And then do you still want some of these questions answered? You're a very questioning group. There's tons of stuff. Okay, if you can do it. And those forms, just that lovely soul that helped me, if you're finished filling them out, because what we want to do is we want to respond to the needs of the family. You didn't get it? Oh, my goodness. Did we finish them all? Okay. So they're missing. So basically the questions were, do you have BK professionals in your country? And then it was BK mental health professionals in your country. And then it was saying, as center coordinators or national coordinators, do you want... Oh, Kopi will write it on the board. That's brilliant. And then you can fill it out on the piece of paper. Okay, will everybody please stand? We're going to do a living values physical stretch. Okay, everybody please stand. Okay, the words are, this is a lie right now. I'm alive, awake, alert, enthusiastic. Okay, you got that? Okay, Antonella, are you here? Come on up. Who else? Living values coordinators. Living, okay. I'm alive, awake, alert, enthusiastic. I'm alive, awake, alert, enthusiastic. I'm alive, awake, alert. Alert, awake, alive. Alive, awake, alert, enthusiastic. Got it? Do this.
Alive, awake, alert, enthusiastic. I'm alive, awake, enthusiastic. Can't hear you. I'm alive, awake, alert, awake, alive. Alive, awake, enthusiastic. Ready? I want to hear the voices. Come on. I'm alive, awake, alert, enthusiastic. 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 Great. Okay, one more time.
Okay, great. Let's have 10 minutes of meditation, because after all, it is 7:10. And then we are going to answer some of the other questions. And those of you that don't have any questions, that's great. After the 10-minute meditation, or whenever, you're very welcome to leave. Okay. So, Om Shanti, thank you. Feel better? Yeah, it's so hard to stay so still sometimes for so long. It's nice to stretch. Okay, sweet souls. Those of you that wish to leave, you're very welcome to leave. And those of you that wish to stay, you're very welcome to stay. So if you'd like to, those that are staying, please move closer. Thank you for coming. Om Shanti. All good wishes. And incidentally, you don't need to go see the psychiatrist every year for a checkup.
I did just come to see them.
Okay. Okay, we'll be ending at 7:45 by that clock, so we'll just go for 20 minutes. For those of you that do want to stay, would you please come up this way? Oh, thank you for giving us the form. Okay, great. Lovely. We're going to answer all the questions in text fire order. Hi. Kala, come sit up here, please. Oh, do you have to go? Okay. What time do you have to leave? A minute right here. Okay, lovely. Om Shanti. How to best treat someone who always speaks lies and tries to prove that the lies are true. A person tries to put down others who may be better than she is. How to handle those persons?
Yeah, I suppose it depends what the lies are about and whether it's, you know, a behaviour that would come into the category of mental. I think we just, come into the category of mental illness. There, you know, if somebody is chronically lying, that is a problem. I might ask Diane to go into a bit of detail about it. Thank you.
Basically, this is not a psychiatric illness usually. You know, unless it's somebody that has an incredible narcissistic personality. But I don't think you need to be concerned about that other than someone who's incredibly insecure and has a lot of ego. You know, this is just a common vice. So work with them on their virtues, work on self-esteem, work on humility. Treat them with great respect. Confront them when you're sure they're lying in your very best loving stage and give them regard, and it will decrease. Usually lying is the experience of a child of a lack of love. It is children who are not loved adequately that lie. And so if you can be in a powerful, loving, respectful form, it will decrease. I invited Kala to come up here because Dr. Kala is a psychiatrist, and so I thought if she wanted to add some things, she may. Okay.
Just on that about the lying too, if the person recognizes that they actually have a problem themselves with lying and feels that they need to have some kind of treatment around that, then that's a possibility. But the person would need to recognise it within themselves. Because some people do chronically lie and it becomes quite debilitating in their life situation, and that can be treated by a psychologist, cognitive behavioural therapy.
Carla, would you like to read that one?
Shanti. Question is, what is the problem behind if someone feels of coming very close to the PK family and then again starts escaping the situation and having panic attacks with breathing problems and how to deal with it? you can see that person pretty much as having a panic disorder, okay? Which is a mental illness, and you can get treatment for that, talking treatment and sometimes also medication. So I would recommend that. However, you know, like with any anxiety problem, if that person is committed to some level of spiritual study and they're comfortable with that and they're making good progress, then let them do that. But I think most of the mental health is about understanding that person. If they're really able to take benefit, then it's okay. But if they're not able to take benefit from their spiritual life, it's better to go and get treatment because otherwise it just won't move.
Thank you, Carla. Here's the question. I am depression. With respect to depression, unless it is depression with psychosis, can we not teach depressed people meditation as the generally used ones help more than most? Yes, common depression, wonderful. They're usually really helped by meditation. We're talking about a major depressive disorder with a history of psychosis. For example, once there was a Brahmin that came here, he had had a major depressive disorder in his life. He had been depressed for years to the extent that it completely disrupted his life, his work, his family. He could not function. He got a lot better. He came to Madhuban. Within 24 hours, he was catatonic. catatonic. He was completely psychotic. He was catatonic. He'd stand and just stare at a wall for hours. He'd go to the bathroom and forget to come back out. He'd have to go in again. So, I mean, but what happened is that, you know, my intuition about it was that there's usually a couple of things happening. Yes, there's a trigger psychologically, but usually there's a physiological component. So my guess was he was also dehydrated and wasn't sleeping, and that could contribute to the onset of that, and that was true. So we asked for a drip. Within 4 hours, he was out of the catatonic state. But then we needed to send him home. You know, because the vibrations can also be too much to go into a rarefied spiritual atmosphere when you have a long history of psychosis. So we're talking about people with a history of psychosis with major depressive disorder. Common everyday depression, wonderful. They do great with positive thinking. They do great with meditation, so don't worry about it. Next question. Yes. If they're suicidal, that's a different story. Yeah. If they're suicidal, they need help immediately. If they're suicidal and they have a plan, I mean, if somebody's really suicidal, you get them hospitalized. There's three times when you have the option to call a psychiatric emergency team over or 911, and that is if people are suicidal, homicidal, or inability to care for themselves, at least in my country. Carla, would you like to say more than that? But then they can usually be involuntarily committed. You know what I do? Actually, what I do, and I do this even with children, is I just talk to them. What happens when people die? And I let them tell me. And then I say, and they always say the body dies and the soul lives, or the spirit lives, or whatever they call it. And I says, which part feels? And they always say the soul or the spirit. And I say, so when people commit suicide, they don't get rid of their sad feelings, do they? And they go, no. And I said, you're feeling bad now, but you're in your body and you can change it. Things can change if you stay in your body. If you kill yourself, they will not change. And I've never had anyone commit suicide. It's a simple thing. Carla, would you like to add to that? Okay, great. All right.
Just a question. What about somebody who sees enemies everywhere and has no acceptance of love, aggressive nature, talking to the self loudly in the bathroom, or when she is alone, and destructive behavior? Well, not wishing to give a diagnosis to this person, but this person probably needs to come to the attention of the regional coordinator, I guess. The behaviour is very, I mean, when whoever's written this says destructive behaviour, I mean, that can be a range of things. Depends on how destructive the behaviour is. Seeing enemies everywhere, well, these things need to be clarified a little bit as to whether it is a psychotic experience that the person's having. In Australia, we have a mental health team, which if the regional coordinator or NCO have a situation they want to discuss, they'll bring it to the attention of the team. There's about four of us on it, and we'll discuss it amongst ourselves and see the best mode of action from there on. And I guess in this situation there'd need to be a few more signs and symptoms of things being highly problematic. I don't want to sound judgmental about it, actually.
Everybody has pain. There is no one that doesn't have pain. There is no one who doesn't have the fear of being abandoned. We're old souls. We all have that. We have to deal with our own issues. So when somebody's having a problem, help them deal with their issues. Whether they go to workshops, whether they have a friend they can talk to, whether they go to counseling. You know, find out who are really loving counselors. Try to detach. But if somebody's talking out loud in the bathroom, they're having some anger issues. That means they're having hurt and fear issues. That means they're in pain. People have they need to deal with pain. It's people who don't deal with their own pain who have more problems. Whether they become more serious psychological problems or whether they develop addictions. Did you add?
I didn't catch whether this person lives in the center or not. I would be really, if I was in your center with you, I would be really interested to chat with that person and see whether there is a possibility of that person being ill or angry and in pain, as Diane's suggesting. So I would be really interested to have a view from a mental health professional. I think that's what you were suggesting, weren't you, Gopi? Yeah. Informally, it's fine.
Great, thank you. How can you address the problem of someone who has a pattern of sleeping and meditation? That is abnormal. How is sleeping and meditation abnormal? Deep sleep. Okay. But basically, a lot of Brahmins are sleep deprived and they need to get more sleep. You know, really, guys. More sleep. Just get more sleep. Go to bed earlier. Ask them, if they sleep in Mahavela, who do you love more, Baba or service? Or go to sleep earlier. Get some fresh air, open window. There was one sister in another country, and she could not stay awake at Amritvela. So you know what Daddy Jacob told her? Stay down. Keep giving away the country. I usually try not to stay up. So Daddy Jacob told her, remember Baba and do Hatha Yoga. Yeah. Hatha Yoga. Yeah, do Hatha Yoga while you're having Amritvela. Well, that's not as fun. Or Karma Yoga. But I advise people to dance. Put on your favorite music and dance. Put on love songs for Baba and dance. And get enough sleep. For heaven's sake, just go to bed. Sorry.
Yeah, I mean, I know someone who's just ironing that Amritvela. I know some people that are ironing that Amritvela, so...
On a slightly more serious note, there is a condition called sleep apnea, and I know a few Brahmins that have got that, so maybe that's what this person has, and it can be treated. It needs to be investigated if they're unable to stay awake.
Okay. You guys, I'm not going to have time for all the questions. He's going to add a little something, and then we'll take... Somebody who asked one of these who's still here, you can ask the last burning question. Thank you very much. You have to know your own body, absolutely.
This question is, can a spiritual experience, being a great light, have cause in mental illness? And I'm just going to repeat what Dr. Patel said, which is, and I think you all commented on it, perhaps you commented, Kathy. Can a spiritual experience like seeing a great light cause mental illness? And, you know, what I'm going to say is, it's not that I don't think meditation causes mental illness. I think it reawakens an underlying tendency. So, you know, from that point of view, any of us could have some symptoms of mental illness simply because there's something underlying. But I don't think it's the cause. It's just like a opening up. So maybe too fast.
Absolutely. There's something else underneath it that's unresolved or would not be occurring. Okay, on that note, lovely souls, let's have just a few seconds of silence and we will continue another time. It's a privilege to be in the room with souls who every day of their lives give so much love. So, Om Shanti.